in your mind, if you were behind the reins of this sort of game, you would have the sort of game where if you get too much allure, monsters would fuck you to death.
Yeah.
Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Nick.
And this is the Aliku Studios podcast. Hype roundup?
Yeah. This is like some sort of like hype. I called it a Phantasmagoria before.
You did. A flower view. Hi, Nick. It's been a while since I've been on mic, actually.
Okay, so here's what happened. There was a week where we got together and played Halo 4 and did not.
The entirety of the campaign.
We
did it over 2 days, right? We played like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Two sittings.
We'll get to the Halo later.
But like 1 week we just didn't do a podcast for some reason.
I don't know.
We just forgot. Too busy playing video games or something.
Yeah.
And then the next week, I actually had one lined up, but due to some technical problems, one half of the podcast was only 11 minutes long out of just about an hour that we recorded.
Oh, did someone record at like quadruple time?
No, tried to use a online voice recording service rather than just get Audacity, and I was like, hey, if it works. And turns out it doesn't work, so we're going to have to try to do that one again in the future.
Oh, my.
But, you know, with actual technology.
That's weird.
No Web.0 type stuff. It's 0.0 because there's none left. Everything that counts is after the decimal. I don't know if you knew that.
What? I'm sorry. I had another thought.
After the
Our previous conversation reminded me of something.
After the decimal is my new... indie album.
Okay.
So,
that sounds pretty... Yeah, that...
Yeah, beyond
that the sounds really legit.
Be on the lookout for that.
Is that like a math rock sort of thing?
No. It's sort of a takeoff. It's about the language of numbers.
Okay.
So I've just taken real words and turned them into numbers, and then those constitute the lyrics. So... So today we have to do a hype episode.
Yes.
Because basically all of our Hype League entries, or like at least half of each,
came out. They're coming to fruition.
In the last couple of weeks.
We're talking about Halo 4. We're talking about Forza Horizon. We're talking about pony fights.
Black Ops 2. We're talking... I mean, there's at least been some news about Rise of the Triad.
Yep, and some news. We got a release date for...
Heart of the Swarm. I saw an interesting bit of news on Remember Me, which was the one about memory remixing.
What?
Okay, it's like Assassin's Creed, but instead of stabbing dudes, you reach into their brain and change their memories.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Which, that alone is still cool, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting piece of news of that. Revengeance. The Revengeance demo is out finally.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, there's gameplay of that to be seen now. So, yeah, we're just going to kind of go down the list and do some roundups on what's going on. And then next week, we'll have to bring in some new stuff. Because now some games are out, which means they have to get booted off our lists.
Yep. So, what do you want to start with? I mean, the one that we've had the most hand-on experience with is Halo 4, mm-hmm. as we've completed that campaign. I don't know if you just want to run through some of the stuff that we got less to say about before we get to there, though.
No, let's start off with something big, and then we'll pick something small in between, because we do have a couple of things. I have quite a bit to say about Forza, and...
Oh, right, of course.
And even though I have not played Black Ops 2, I tried to stop last night and get out of a red box, but I, like... When I checked it earlier in the day, it still had some in stock. By the time I got there, it was empty, which was sad.
I've heard a lot of very interesting things about the campaign mode of Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
But I haven't, like, seen it firsthand, so... I mean, go listen to Giant Bomb and let whoever it was that was gushing about that gush about that. But what we did play was Halo 4. Me and you played through the entirety of the campaign, and I've been playing a shitload of multiplayer. And I think... I had a pretty great time with it. Let's talk about... How'd you find the campaign? How'd you...
From a gameplay perspective, it's still Halo, but with a new set of guns.
Halo-ass Halo.
Like, I was, while I was playing, like, there's basically now a third set of weapons.
Yep.
And, you know, the classic idea has always been, you know, bullets do health damage and plasma does shield damage.
Yeah.
And I was never really able to determine, like, what the new set was doing or how it had to be retooled.
Yeah, I don't know either. Like, I don't know if that stuff is as important as it was in, like, Halo 2 and 3. But, yeah, I don't really know. Yeah, it's hard to tell how those things really interact with the guys that you're familiar with, aside from the fact that they all pretty much function like guns you're already familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, there is a pistol and a precision rifle and an assault rifle and a sniper rifle and a rocket launcher.
What I will say is I felt like there was some, like, ammo scarcity,
mm-hmm.
because I felt myself changing weapons a lot more often and sort mm-hmm. of scrounging around on the battlefield, and I like that.
Yeah, I think with, like, the added variety of weapons, it sort of waters down the pool of things you're going to find ammo pickups for, especially being that, like, you don't find ammo pickups for half the Covenant weapons being what, you know, how they are. So there, you do a lot of swapping between things, and the fact that they do kind of fall into existing archetypes makes it, I think, easier to work around with that, because it's not like, oh, I ran out of assault rifle rounds, what am I going to... Oh, there's a suppressor right here. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Which... I mean, everybody's been saying that they wish there was more of a distinct feel to the new alien weapons, but I don't know. Not going to beat that dead horse.
Like, if anything, I don't know, just the way that they use them in the campaign, I feel like the human weapons were almost all the specialty weapons, because you have the railgun, you have the rocket launcher, you have the saw now, which that's a new addition, you have the DMR and the battle rifle, and, like, the sniper. Like, I don't recall really using the assault rifle very much in that game, or the pistol, for that matter.
Yeah, I think the pistol is less prominent than it's been in past games.
Like, any time a human weapon came up, it was, like, the specialty, where you only got, like between, like, 3 and 6 shots before you had to switch out. And then the Forerunner weapons? Mm-hmm. Like, is that the term? Or, like,
Prometheans? Yeah.
Talking about the Halo story is a whole separate beast, which I think we'll have to get into, but...
Yeah.
I feel like they've now sort of switched it, like, the weapons you were using were Forerunner and Covenant weapons mostly against each other, and then every once in a while a human weapon showed up, and you were like, thank God, this is awesome now.
Yeah. Not that the new weapons weren't good, but most of the times, you know, when a human weapon showed up, it was like, oh, dude, a railgun.
Yeah.
You know?
The Spartan laser did not appear in a campaign, did it? I don't recall it being there. Oh, I suppose technically the laser on the dropship functioned as the Spartan.
Oh, yeah. It might have been in that level when you were on the big elephant thing, where there were all the tanks.
We spent most
of the time in a tank. So we didn't use it, but I bet if it was in the campaign, it would
might
be
have been
there.
In there somewhere. Yeah, there were some weapons like on the walls of that didn't always.
A lot of railgun action, though.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It actually sort of encouraged me. I went back and not too long ago, Giant Bomb was doing their 24-hour for Child's Play Halo games.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went back and I watched the first video of that to see if it was going to be bearable to watch, because it was like the non-main personalities trying to do it, and they're kind of just like a couple of dudes playing Halo.
Who was it?
Dave Snyder and Alex Rodriguez.
Okay.
That might be a baseball player. But like two of the guys who they do a bunch of... No, it wasn't even Dave Snyder, I think. But like two of the guys who are usually behind the scenes, like I think they are actually like the two main web programmers.
Okay.
Or one of them is like the second programmer and the other dude is another one of your like streaming professionals.
Not dudes who are in front of the camera and on mics all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But whenever you need like a second stream of stuff going on, they're pretty much there to they can take on that mantle. One of them was like the, you know, HOTAS expert. But yeah, so after playing Halo 4, I was curious about like, well, how about like a retrospective? Like, how has this changed over time? And like Halo 1, like it's sort of weird. Like, they do some new things that I like, but I I feel like there's something that Halo tried to be at one point, which it never really was, where it was, you know, the idea of, like, the combat puzzle, mm-hmm. where it's about, like, you know, prioritize targets to get their weapons to be able to handle other targets, and just, like, every time you go in, you need to figure out, like, the sequence of events you should take.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you cock something up, then you're running around just dumping ammo everywhere you can to try to get back into a good position. And especially with grenades, like, somehow I feel Halo has made grenades, like, a very prominent weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, a prominent action, even, more than a weapon.
Well, I mean, if you think about, like, in comparison to Halo at the time compared to other games, like, the offhand grenade thing was not commonly done before Halo.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't something that you always had at hand. Like, I'm thinking of, like, I don't know, in Quake 2, you had to specifically scroll to grenade.
I think even in... I tried playing a little bit of Fear recently. I'm trying to remember if that was offhand or not, but yeah. it would not surprise me if it wasn't.
Was that pre-Halo?
No, I guess it wasn't. No, it couldn't have been.
Yeah.
But still.
In GoldenEye.
But even now, like... A lot of times I feel like a grenade is something that you, like, in most games, a grenade is something that you sort of throw out to
get out of a situation.
Or to do area control, to just be mm-hmm. like, I don't want people over there, so I'll put a grenade there and then expect them from this direction.
Yeah.
Where in Halo, like, I feel the human grenades work that way, but especially, like, sticky, like, anything that's, like, any sticky than other alien ones.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they're just, like, another thing you do. Like, I'm going to shoot this guy... And then because my gun is empty, I'm going to grenade that guy, and he's going to deal with that, and that'll give me enough time to reload. Like, it's,
mm-hmm.
it is sort of like an extension of the time you're making attacks, but, like, in a totally different way. Because there also, there's been a couple of grenade launchers.
Yes.
But... Like, nothing behaves exactly like a grenade. Like, nothing has that particular arc.
Yeah,
nothing...
like, the... I really liked the original Brute Shot. If you remember, like, in... I think it was in Halo 2 when the first Brute Shot was introduced, right?
Maybe?
I think so. But the way it worked was that it shot, like, a straight-line projectile that had a time fuse and also bounced.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use it to kind of, like, bounce around corners into guys or, like, skip it off the ground and hit them from behind and stuff. And I really liked that. And then they made it really boring in the next game. They were just like, well, let's have it not do that anymore. And it kind of just turned into a shitty rocket launcher.
Yeah.
And then there was the grenade launcher in Reach, which was, like, a remote explosive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't really... Like, you know, you were only firing one at a time, and you were triggering them manually and stuff, so that was kind of more...
Almost like a tactical weapon.
Yeah, it handled very differently.
It is a high-finesse weapon.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Halo 4 continues to be Halo on the mechanical side.
Yeah.
I'd still like to see somebody try to bring back dual-wielding. Like, I'm still not sure why that went away. That I really enjoyed dual-wielding.
I think they had a lot of trouble balancing it.
Mm.
Like, I have this problem where when a game comes out that I really like, I just start going into wikis and everything and reading about shit.
Yeah.
First of all, there is a lot of really poorly written analysis of, like, Halo Extended Universe fiction on the internet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I bet.
And second of all, like, a lot of really well-researched mechanical... analysis of Halos because of, you know, their esports past.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot how big Halo was in making MLG a thing. But there were a lot of weapons in Halo 2 that actually became less powerful if you were dual-wielding them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted them to be, like, effective if you were holding them, you know, one-handed so you could still melee and everything. And not horrifically overpowered if you were dual-wielding them.
Yeah. But just having two guns on screen. Especially mixed akimbo.
Yeah.
Just that phrase sort of burns a fire inside of me that hasn't... Not since, like, you know, UT1 mods.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And... Yeah, like, having, like, plasma gun pistol, just, like, wear a dude's shield down and then just pop real fast.
I'm trying to remember.
Liked that shit.
I'm trying to remember what
so
game
much.
It was. I don't think it was. Maybe it was Darkness, but just like you had an akimbo mode, and the way you reloaded was you just dropped the guns and picked up two new
yeah,
different.
Yeah, I think that was Darkness because like each time it was like different guns, right?
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic.
And that was the what was it? The 5.7s and the specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Where the reload animation for them was just drop them and then grab two more from your vest.
Yeah. No, the 5.7 or the 7.5 or whatever it was.
5.7.
That was a single one. I don't think you could get that akimbo. The
couldn't
Berettas
you?
Were the only ones you could get akimbo, I think.
No, you could akimbo a couple.
We should go play some specialist.
Oh, man. I wonder if there's still servers up.
I don't know.
Man, I haven't even reinstalled fucking Neo Tokyo since my last hard drive went. Jeez. I need to get back on that, because I keep seeing, like, announcements for it.
Yeah.
And, like, the last time I played, which was a couple months ago, like, there were new maps in development and stuff. Like, I think they're... well, it's on Steam Greenlight, for one thing, so
yeah.
It's getting attention through that. So, like, I think that fabled, you know, just on the Horizon patch that has been just on the Horizon for, like, 2 or 3 years or whatever may actually be on the Horizon.
Wow. I've been in a lot of gas stations recently, and so that really makes me want to get back into modding or making levels.
You've been thinking of no credit?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, good.
I'm thinking I might make Nuketown for Neo Tokyo.
Gross. Nuketown's a bad map.
I don't know. Like, I haven't spent much time on it. I don't know if that's true or not. It was a bad map the one time I played because we were playing, like, Snapshot, which is the dumbest thing.
Is that, like, snipers only, no aiming?
Yes,
okay.
That is exactly that.
Gross.
Like, you can just tap the aim button to sort of center it on your view and to make it, like, an instant shot, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Because it becomes accurate before it actually zooms in all the way.
Yeah, or something like that. Let's talk about the Halo 4 story for a little bit.
Okay. Let's talk about that. It's going to be kind of spoilery, I guess, so if you care... that much, maybe skip ahead, but some really bonkers shit goes down in this game.
It was all really dumb.
Yeah.
And like, I mean that was sort of the other thing that spurred me into checking out older Halos again.
Mm-hmm.
Was just like, what was the story in those games? Like, and you know how I look at story. It's the what is the narrative? What do you do? What is the actions you take?
What is your role in the greater narrative?
Yeah, and
you murder that prophet,
and that happens. That's the end. Like at the first one, like you're on a Pillar of Autumn, and Master Chief wakes up, and then the ship gets shot down, and then you're just on the Halo for a while.
Yeah. And then I don't even remember, like, what you do at the end of that game aside from ride your warthog through everything that's falling apart.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure the opening of Halo 2 is Chief doing an orbital entry in nothing but his armor.
Yeah.
And then some guys are like, oh, shit, is he dead? And he just gets up and like, no, but I need a shotgun.
Yeah, like, were you racing to a ship at the end of Halo 1? I don't even remember.
No, I think you were just racing, away from an exploding thing.
Like, you went through the library, and then you punched all those floods, and there was, like, some weird section where you had to, like, shoot grates off of something and then fire rockets into tubes?
Maybe? I don't even...
I remember that pretty specifically. And then you raced your thing away.
There's a silent cartographer.
Yeah.
And that happens for a while.
Yeah.
That
was a good level.
I think, like, that's the only thing I remember, though. Like,
well, because
I'm pretty, like, going back and thinking about it, like, I think in most Halo games there are, like, two sequences. There is, especially, like, Halo 1, like, just starting there, there's, like, grassy hilled areas and then inside alien structures.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like that, I felt, in the first game, I felt like neither of those was very good and there was too much of each.
No, I liked that silent cartographer level. Maybe it's like just nostalgia glasses because it seemed it wasn't like Metroid Prime levels of it or whatever, but it was a kind of just like, you know, drive around this, you know, big area, find these alien ruins, go in and press a button, and then drive around and find the next one, you know, and maybe in my memory that was a lot more of the game than it was, because you did also like spend a lot of time in a purple alien ship.
Yeah. Well, that's like the way they did it in the first game. I felt like everything was a lot more closed off. Like it was a lot more almost like Half-Life. Like, if you go back and play Half-Life 2, that game loads in between levels a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas compared to, I want to say, in Reach and even in 4, the sections where you're just sort of flying around like a big open area and landing places, like, I really like those sequences where you're just like, you know, big open things with stuff in between. Because that is like a different kind of gameplay now.
Yeah.
But like going between and doing all that.
And Halo 1 didn't have a Star Fox segment, which was, I mean, to its detriment.
That's to pretty much every game's detriment.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how in Star Fox Assault, like, there are Star Fox sections now, and then there's parts that aren't.
When you say that's now, do you mean, like, 4 years ago or whenever when that game came out?
Whatever. It's still the most recent Star Fox.
Is it? What about the one on the DS?
Yeah, I guess that was Command Mission. That was all right.
Yeah. Tap the screen to do a backflip.
Yeah. But, like, there's one section of... There's, like, one specific area in Halo 1 that I remember really, really enjoying.
Yeah.
And I feel it, I don't even know if I'm remembering correctly, but like, it was like a little like structure with Hunter, maybe one or two outside of it, and it's like in a bowl created by the mountains.
I actually remember that area very specifically as well.
Yeah. Like, I think that is the best area in that game. That is the only area I remember being like, all right, this feels good. This actually feels interesting. Where the rest of it is like purple corridors, that sucks, and like green hilly corridors, which also kind of sucked. A lot of corridors in that game.
I feel like the outdoor segments were a lot more open than anything I saw in 4, though. I don't know.
But that's the thing, like, too open? Really, I think, again, in Reach, that sequence where like you have to take down a couple of AA guns and you're like going through a park next to the river.
Wait. Oh yeah, that bit, yeah.
That bit was really good.
That's a good section, yeah.
I think it's when they combine it, where they have like a naturized area with artificial man-made structures in it. And especially that one was especially good because you start out like doing like a foot ascent, and then like halfway through it, as you move across, then you start getting vehicles and fighting tanks and stuff like that, and it has a really good build up. Like, that was a really good section. This isn't really talking about story yet.
No,
but that's the thing. Okay, so
because it's kind of lamentable and weird.
Well, because that's the other thing. Like, people are talking about like, oh yeah, if you read the books, they do a lot of fleshing out. They do like none in the games, or at least none that matter. They have a lot of that. Proper noun issue?
Yeah.
Like, thinking back to Halo 4, like, we were on Reverie?
What?
Relevance?
Oh, the planet?
Yeah, like, the thing that the planet was named.
I don't even remember. It was a Forerunner shield world.
Yeah. I would almost prefer if they said that, because that is descriptive. There was, like, one line right near the end of the game. I think when Cortana, like, freaked out and whoopsed.
Yeah.
Like, right before that segment, she was just like, oh no, the Didact is trying to take the Composer out of Revelry, or whatever that planet was called. Yeah. Requiem.
Requiem, yeah.
But just, like, those are three proper nouns, which you, like... When she said that, it took me a long time to actually, like, parse out and translate what she was talking about. Because those were just, like names and words.
The alien ball dickhead is trying to take the giant, like, Tronifier MacGuffin out of the place where we were playing the game.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like they're trying too hard to make it sound like some sort of Beowulf-type legend.
Like,
you want to call that, you know, call it the Digitizer. That is descriptive. We know what it is. If you want to add to that and call it like the, call it the Composer Digitizer Unit or something like that, and do, you know, something in quote in its title. But at the same time, like, a lot of that game is about, you know, the sounds of gunfire, and then Chief put me in that terminal.
Yeah.
Like, that is sort of like the most words that are spoken. Is Chief, put me over there. Chief, I'm going to open this door.
They
Chief,
do
Chief.
that sort of like aspiring for the epic in a lot of things. Like, you know, you have your Mjolnir armor, and, you know,
the Spartan program.
Yeah, you know, trying to harken back to this legendary event and these, you know, mythological weapons and tools and stuff. I always thought it was kind of weird how they handled, like, the human names for alien things.
Mm.
Like, all of the elites are just called elites because they are the elites in the Covenant army. But is that, like, that's what we call their entire species, I guess? Like, I know that they're, like, the Sangheili or whatever, but no one ever says Sangheili.
Yeah, and also, wasn't there, like, isn't the story something about, like, the elites and the brutes were, like, two different factions
mm-hmm.
that aren't even of the same species?
No, they're not.
Yeah, like, so, like we just call them the Covenant, but that is, like, an allied faction.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, well, it's also just the aliens.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of like, it was something I remember from a Kevin Smith talk, where, like, you know, to make something more interesting as you're talking about it, you sort of mix up what you call things. But in, like in the Halo games, specifically, since that's just what we're talking about, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, actually, in video games a lot, like, people don't talk enough to really mix things up.
Mm.
So what either ends up happening is it's, like, boring because you don't have, like, three names for the same thing that sort of change depending on whose perspective you're looking at. The idea of, you know, main characters means that you don't get a chance to change that perspective, so that's why in Halo you never hear, like, the alien name for things.
I feel like whenever they... I remember, like, in Halo 2 when they had the chapter with, like, the Arbiter and you were playing as that guy, I feel like they still, like, you know, they were all speaking in alien language, but they still said, like, elites and brutes and stuff in the subtitles, even though it was an entirely different perspective.
Yeah. And, like, I don't know how much of that is a function of bad writing or compromising writing for games. Because there is a sense of, like, since you're not going to be talking much, since we do want to fit this in, like...
We want to make sure you know what we mean.
Yeah, like...
But then, like, compare that to, you know, when they introduced the Didact, and Cortana's all like, oh, no, it's the guy, it's the Didact. And Master Chief is all like, oh, shit, the Didact. And we're just like, who?
Like... Everyone's been saying, like, his introduction was totally out of context. Like, I felt there was a, like, I didn't feel like his introduction was out of context. Because, like, he came up and we're just like, who is this? And then there's a moment when, like, in-game they all go, it's that guy? But they don't even have that. Like, I just sort of feel like there was, like, a silent that happened. Because all of a sudden people are speaking like they know who he is.
Yeah.
But also I feel like that never really mattered. He's like, this... In the context of the game, this man is important because he is fucking up your shit. So, like, it didn't really bother me so much that suddenly people knew who he was, because I knew who he was. He's is that dude who is fucking up shit. Yeah.
He's that dude that all those Covenant guys bowed to for a reason.
Yeah. But also, there's a... It's almost like, you know, they're trying to jump the gun with proper nouns.
Because,
you know, after a certain point, you can say, like, oh, yes, the Didact is taking the Composer out of... or the Didact is making pacts with the Covenant or something like that.
But you can't lead with that before you've introduced, like, what any of these things mean or are.
Yeah. Like, or even then, like, the only thing that sort of stick with me that, like a list of names I can list off of my head of just, like, proper nouns from those games is basically, like, Spartan... and Covenant. And, you know, basically the things that have lasted for multiple games. Like, really universal constants. Like even Elites is sort of a thing, but that is talking about a subset at some point. But it's like, you know, I don't remember any ship names from any of the things. There's stuff that blew up. A Warthog has remained constant. I can name that.
What about the Truth and Reconciliation?
Was that
the ship you jump onto in the first game.
Like, I can't even...
That's, like, the only name of a Covenant thing that I remember.
Yeah.
Because it was the name of that, like, chapter.
I remember the Scarabs, because they were so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to jump on them with a mongoose. But, you know, that's... Like, nothing else really has that... Like, everything else is just fluff that they don't make you care about. I think they just do so little with story that they don't get a chance to care about.
Yeah, I guess, like, trying to... Like, when they bring in the Didact and the Librarian and the Composer and everything, like, trying to treat that with the same amount of familiarity with things that you'd been interacting with and knew about for like the past five games,
mm-hmm.
I think that might be where the trouble comes from. Like, everybody already has a handle on, you know, the Covenant and the Master Chief and Cortana, but then it's like there's no sort of attempt to get people familiar with these new things before it's just the Didact and the, I forgot the name of it already, the Composer.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you want to go back further. The Librarian? I totally forgot who that was.
Yeah.
Also, you want to start talking about, like, Guilty Spark and the Grave Mind and whoever's alien butt you were climbing inside of in Halo 3 for a little while.
What?
That was an alien butts level. It was like Gradius.
That was the Flood. Those were Flood butts.
Like, but like, you know, there's a lot of things that it almost isn't worth it to call back to because, like, they may be important for a game, but they have the same problem of just like, hey, this is important, but and we're going to treat it like it's important without really showing you why it's important, without giving you a section where, like, you interact with it enough to make it memorable and be like, oh, this is why I care about this. They just show up and be like, here's this thing we care about, and then move
yeah.
on. So, like, the Librarian was literally in, like, that one cutscene.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she was even in, like, a playable section talking to you. I think
no.
it was just, yeah.
She showed up in, like, a weird spirit dream and was like, John, you are the gene seed. I have created you over a millennia to press those buttons real good.
Yep. Slam every button and know how to use alien weaponry immediately.
Yeah.
Just look at it compile. I like guns that compile.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, also, whatever they were about to do with that shit, fuck that. Just like, oh, yeah, you are the product of, you know, a million-year experiment. Is this Hitchhiker's Guide now? What are you doing? If they, like, continue to like, that, moving forward, if they just make more Halo game,
mm-hmm.
and don't really try to follow up with that plot line, I would prefer it. Deal as little with that as you can, because it's doing that same thing. It's like Chief has always been sort of a savior, but he's been a savior out of necessity.
Yeah, just
now,
because...
Now he is a designed savior, and I think that makes him more boring.
Yeah, that's actually something that I didn't like that happened in Metroid, eventually. Like, in Metroid... You were just like, oh yeah, Samus is just like this chick in power armor. She's a bounty hunter. Somebody said, go to Zeebs and fight the Metroids. And she was like, okay, yeah, sure. And then in Super Metroid, it's like, okay, remember that time you fought the Metroids and the Mother Brain and all that? Well, now there's more shit. Do you care about that? Okay, go deal with it. And then, like, eventually in the later games, there's this, like, all this weird stuff about her being, like, you know, raised by Chozo and infused with Chozo blood and, like,
yeah.
you know, she's the last heir of this extinct race and, like, and specifically there's, like, this part in what was it? Zero Mission that this might be a weird finicky thing that's just about me, but, like, they sort of made her armor, like, this magical thing. Like, you, in Zero Mission, it's where the Zero Suit comes from. Like, there's this part in the game where you lose your armor and you have to go through, like, this sneaking section.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like, it's a pretty cool section. And then at the end, like, you fight this weird, like...
Wall mural.
Like, this weird wall mural clone of Samus, and then you get your armor restored in, like, a burst of light, and it's like... Eh. It's like in Iron Man when eventually he started like carrying just like a briefcase that would nano construct his armor out of nothing, and it's just like, then how is he different from any other like superhero? He completely lost his flavor.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a man who built a thing. Now he's just like, I have this magic box that gives me superpowers.
Yeah. I mean in the idea of video games and like that savior complex happening, or the mm-hmm. design savior complex happening, that could just be, like, a problem with sequels,
mm-hmm.
because, like, it almost becomes, like, a collective unconsciousness thing where you're just like, well, yeah, we're making the fifth one of these games. Of course this is going to be the main character. You're like, he's been the main character since the first game, since the beginning, so, you know, he's kind of destined to be the main character. Metal Gear has kind of gotten around that. Yeah, because at least they had Raiden for a while.
Well, I mean, they
for that one game,
and you know,
and technically having Big Boss as a separate character.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the only thing that you know kind of gets around that is like Final Fantasy. I'm surprised Mass Effect didn't exactly go there. Then again, Mass Effect had its own problems by the time it hit the end.
Mm-hmm.
No, Mass Effect had a little bit of that because, you know, you're the first human Spectre.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit. But then, you know, Spectre program goes away and then it comes back and then there's a little hologram kid and you want to stab him, but he's made of light so you can't.
And maybe you're a robot.
Yeah, you may be a robot. No, yeah, you are a robot. They rebuild your ass. But, like, you never had the sense that, you know, you were destined to be it.
Yeah.
It's a very, again, it's kind of like a Jack Bauer kind of situation. Like, you are the hero,
mm-hmm.
but only because you are, like...
in this situation and dealing with it.
Yeah, because you are the only one who found the strength to deal with this bullshit. Like, you are a hero of necessity, not of destiny.
Yeah, like that...
It's like, no, it didn't have to be you.
Yeah.
And like, you know the, what? Good the, for you. You fucking manned up.
Yeah, and, like, the Chief's whole strength was basically, like, you know, he's the product of this, you know, lifelong upbringing and augmentation and everything to make him this super soldier, and he's the one that's doing all of this because he's the one that's left and the one that's here, you know?
Yeah. But at least, like, it was the Spartan program. Like,
yeah.
It's, and sort of Reach, I think, contextualized that nicely because that is, you know, a Halo game with Spartans before the Chief is, like, activated.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought did a really good job of making, like having, with that game behind me, Chief seems less like a superhero character to me. Because he is not the only Spartan. He is not the only one doing this sort of badass shit. Like, he was like, yes, he's the last one. Yes, he was part of this program, but, like, there were a ton of people in that program who got child stolen and robotified and stuff.
And, like, especially, it's more, you know, stuff that doesn't show up. Well, no, it kind of showed up in the games, because the guys in Reach weren't Spartan 2s like Chief. They were Spartan 3s.
Yeah.
Which were, like...
No, they were Spartan 2. Like, Chief was a later one.
No, Chief's a 2.
Really?
Yeah. I looked all this shit up.
Wow, okay.
Like, Spartan 1s were... the program was originally with, like, you know, consenting adults.
Yeah.
You know, people who signed up for this shit.
Yeah.
Spartan 2s were when they started kidnapping kids mm-hmm. and, like, indoctrinating them into it. Spartan 3s were, I think it was, like, some petty, like, political bullshit where, like, somebody was like, oh, Dr. Halsey thinks she's so great kidnapping kids. I can make Spartans better and there'll be more of them and I won't have to get my hands dirty like that. And so that was like some other project. And then Spartan 4s are the other guys in 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just dudes in armor. They're like back to dudes who signed up for this shit.
Yeah, basically. Which, like, new Marines.
The chronology of that really doesn't make a lot of sense to me then, because if all the guys on Reach were Spartan 3s, then why wasn't Chief active already if he was a Spartan 2 that came before him?
Yeah, like, I was swearing that they were an older version of Spartans. Like,
nope.
That's why they all died. Or something.
I don't know, man.
But yeah, like, I don't know. They did that, they have that whole scene with Chief, and that does not sit well with me.
Yeah.
But I do like...
The Cortana going crazy stuff, I liked a fair bit of it.
Yeah.
Like, aside from the parts where they went for, like, really heavy-handed emotional appeal, which is just like, Chief, you know, you gotta tell me which one of us is really the machine.
And I'm See, just like, I still like that. Because the problem before was, you know, Chief, like, it's like right at the beginning of the game when they're like, so do you think Chief is the best because he is a sociopath?
Yeah, like,
And she's like, I'm not saying it's hurting his chances.
Yeah, like, I like the way they're characterizing him as just, like, this asocial, you know, warrior guy.
Yeah, but, and, like, I want the answer to be yes.
Yeah.
Over the course of the next couple of games.
And, like,
because, like, with Cortana going, like, crazy and going rampant,
mm-hmm.
and... she's getting more human. Like, she is worried, she is scared, she has moments of being angry and forlorn and stuff. And that is like really great. And it helps because Chief has never been a human foil to her computerized ideas.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So like when she gets emotional and he's just like, so you're going to give me a checkpoint to go to or what?
Yeah. He's just like, there's that part early on where she's like hacking a door or whatever, and then goes kind of glitchy afterwards. And he's just like, no, it's cool. Let's keep going. Next point. And she's like, no, it's not okay. What about this is okay?
Yeah.
And just like, man, I wasn't built for this shit.
Yeah. Like that, like I feel they sort of ruin it a little bit right at the end. Cause like he is forlorn.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not believe that as like a Chief thing to do. Like he's like anytime like he like knows he has to show emotional response, like he should just get like super flustered.
Mm.
But like Chief is not pensive. I've never seen him be pensive. Like he knows what to do all the time.
Yeah.
And if anything, it would be interesting, like if you want to sort of humanize him in a way of, you know, humans make mistakes.
Yeah.
So keep his personality of like
taking actions, but maybe they're just not.
Yeah.
Right,
like
anymore.
What if like, you know, being faced with emotion, like the thing is, he just starts making mistakes. Like he has that same like, no, I'm the Master Chief. I solve your problem with this gun. But then like there suddenly starts like he suddenly starts being wrong, and there are repercussions for it.
Mm.
Like that would be interesting.
The
and fit with his character.
Yeah. The actual shit at the end of the game with Cortana, though, I have no idea, like, what happened or how I feel about it.
Yeah. I don't even, like I said, like, I think they had, like, a little bit of a, I don't even know. Like, it could, like, if they had, yeah, I don't know.
So at the end of the game, well, first of all, there's a really unsatisfying sort of boss sequence where,
yeah,
like it's a like a really satisfying thing that happens because this Didact asshole that has been going around like wrecking shit the entire game gets like a grenade punched into his chest and thrown off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens in this cutscene that you have minimal control over. That's basically just like hold up to climb up this ledge, press right bumper to kill the Didact. That's super unsatisfying.
Yeah. Like, it is... literally, like, a day or two later, I was thinking back on it and going like, wait a second, did we beat a boss in that game? Like, it was not a boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, one of the most, like, anticlimactic things ever. Even in Mass Effect 2, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
When you fight that skeletal human reaper baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that was a particularly like interesting boss fight, let's call it. Like, I don't think
it wasn't mechanically challenging.
Yeah, like it was just like, all right, here's like a it only became sort of like just like a target range.
Mm-hmm.
But it was big, it had multiple steps, and it was satisfying. It felt like a boss. But you put it in like a, especially since it was like a 2 command cutscene.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, it was mechanically the exact same thing at the beginning of the game when you were like crawling around that elevator shaft in the falling apart ship.
Yeah.
Which was hold up to climb up this elevator shaft and then, oh no, there's elite at the top. Press right bumper to kill the elite.
Yeah.
Like a fucking command icon comes up and just says, press right bumper to kill elite.
At least Asura's Wrath was just like, press B to shut him up.
To burst, yeah.
And you get achievements for shutting people up in the middle of their monologue.
That was also, like, almost the totality of the gameplay in Asura's Wrath was stuff like that. Like,
but that's the thing, they made it flavorful. It wasn't...
Yeah, but
they weren't mechanical quick time events.
Yeah.
It was all about the flourish, it was all about how they were presented and, you know, how they were... How they were flavored,
but I'm saying
that
like
game was flavor blasted.
The wasted potential here. Like there have been boss fights in Halo games before. Like it is.
Has there?
Yeah.
There's been like a lot of race sequences.
There have been boss fights though. I remember I forget if it was 2 or 3. There was like some brute commander guy that you fought, and he put out like holograms of himself, and he had a big hammer. There have been boss fights before.
That might have been two. That might have been I don't remember that one, and two's the only one I haven't finished.
Okay.
Like, I feel like three, the closest thing to a boss was fighting, like, three scarabs in a row, which, again, a scarab, jump on it, blow up the thing, jump off. That's three steps. That's good for a boss fight. Three forms.
Yeah.
The form where you jump on, the form where you punch it, and the form where you jump off. And then one had the race sequence at the end, more than anything else. I think three had something interesting. I'm trying to remember what ODST had at the end, but that game...
It had that, drove, like, a tank down a highway and then played, like, a firefight sequence.
Maybe. Because that game was also, like, mildly nonlinear.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And then Reach...
Reach had Survive, which was really... That was
powerful. Yeah. They did a good job on that part. But I feel like the story, it looks fantastic.
Yeah. The game looks and plays fantastically. And I haven't talked about the multiplayer at all, and there are problems with the multiplayer, but it's still really fucking fun.
But the way they do architecture, like we've talked on the podcast before about like the idea of narrative through level design, and doing that. Like, I feel like they're doing a better job with that.
Yeah.
Even if sort of functionally it is still like a lot of like alien corridors, they look better, they feel better, they're connected in like sort of fluffy ways.
What I always liked about Halo was the sort of faction specific architecture, like, you know, Covenant structures and human structures and Forerunner structures and like Flood biomass stuff all has a really specific like look and feel to it that I really appreciated how they've used over the course of the series.
Yeah. So.
And Halo 4 is no exception to that.
Yeah. The gondola sequence.
Yeah, like, that was really pretty good. Cool.
Like, that had an interesting look to it, and just, like, the way things were laid out. Like, the way things were laid out seemed more faction-specific, rather than it just be, like, different colored corridors.
Yeah.
And that is something good that they are doing. But yeah, like, you want to talk about the multiplayer a little bit?
Sure.
Because I feel like, isn't it kind of just Halo multiplayer plus?
Well, it's kind of changed up in a number of ways, mostly the loadout system. Bungie was always really opposed to any sort of, like, metagame progression and loadout system. 343, not so much. And so there's now, like, a metagame level-up progression where you are... Like, every level you unlock Spartan points, which you get to unlock specific weapons and armor abilities and whatnot that themselves, like, become available for purchase at sort of level gates. Which they all become available for purchase pretty quickly. But, like, after level 20 or so, like, you start leveling up slow enough that the choices you made early on are what you're going to be sticking with for the most part. I really like the new Blood Gulch map.
is the progression stuff, like, first of all, would you say that is like the main new difference? And second of all, does it make it more enjoyable?
Well, the way that the progression stuff sort of changes, now instead of, you know, in whatever game mode you have, spawning with the specified loadout of, you know, like, assault rifle and pistol, or like just plasma pistol and Slayer or whatever, you know, you're always spawning with from a specific set. Like, you can't just choose to spawn with, like, I want a sniper rifle and a rocket launcher. You basically have like your choice of assault and precision rifles and then pistols. So it changes the sort of dynamic where there aren't as many weapons on map. The ones that are on map are, like, specifically power weapons now, so it's, like, you know, rockets and railguns and swords and shotguns and needlers.
Which is kind of the ones that all got, everyone would rush to get to, like, a DMR. Or whatever, and then that became, like, the real choke point of the map.
Yeah, and they're also semi-randomized, so that it's not just like, oh, we're on this map, everyone's gonna race to get the sword in the first 2 minutes, and then, you know, it plays out from there. So I guess in the long term, it sort of addresses problems of the gameplay getting stale.
Mm-hmm.
I
imagine they also have to change like some of the design philosophies, like specifically Zanzibar, the way the sword was in the middle of the windmill.
Mm-hmm.
Like I imagine there aren't like iconic pickup locations now if it's semi-randomized
really.
And you don't know what you're going to pick up from a certain pickup.
Yeah, they're just sort of placed around the map via like these drop pods or something. When they're indoors, they just kind of teleport in. When they're outside, they literally drop down from the sky and explode into a little thing.
Oh, they drop down every time the weapon respawns?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's the same thing that they use to deliver the ordnance drops, which are sort of their take on killing streaks. They're not in killing streaks.
Mm-hmm.
Kill streak rewards. They're not in every game mode. I think for the most part, they're just in like, you know, Slayer, Big Team Slayer. I don't think they would be in SWAT or like Slayer Pro. They're not in Flood or Odd. I don't think they're in Oddball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're in Capture the Flag either. But basically, like, every handful of kills or assists, you get a choice of three things to call down. And it's usually broken down, like, some kind of temporary power-up, like an overshield or a speed boost. Some kind of weapon that can range from, like, a needler to a rocket launcher. Or just, like, a grenade refill. Mm. It sort of changes the way that the flow of gameplay, because there isn't the, you know, the predictable and known weapon spawns on the map,
mm-hmm.
which kind of makes it like if you're just playing like Big Team Slayer with a bunch of randos, like, you know, if you're playing on a map with vehicles, all the vehicles and the power weapons will be there at start. So like for 2 minutes, gameplay is really crazy. And then all of the vehicles are destroyed and all the power weapons are empty. And then everyone's just using battle rifles until the next wave of stuff spawning.
Yeah.
But I have played... I remember playing a game of Capture the Flag a while back with some guys that were, like, really tactical about keeping an eye on, like, vehicle spawns and not leaving any of our vehicles unobserved, like, unused, just sitting there so that it could be stolen from us and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, at a certain point, like... There still is sort of a tactical mindset to, you know, what's spawning in the map and what can we control. Like, you know, is this rocket launcher that just dropped down on the part of the map that we control, or is it in their hands and stuff like that? So I think it's a different sort of feel, but it's still...
Does it have that same main thing of you're going to sort of run at a guy, empty a clip, and then punch him when you get there to kill him?
Yes.
Okay.
Unless you're cross-map and you're shooting at each other with battle rifles.
Okay, so it's Halo.
Yes.
Okay.
It is still, like, the fundamental combat is still Halo, and it's still really fucking fun.
Like, it does not, it does not change the flow enough that
And the loadout thing, which, like, at first I was like, I don't know, Like, it does sort of empower you in knowing that, like, okay, I have this class that I set up with the auto turret, you know, the deployable sentry thing, and the storm rifle, and I'm going to sit in our base and I'm going to protect our flag because nothing is going to get past me and my rifle and my sentry.
Yep.
It's pretty nice. I like it. And I'm not sure there are sort of, it uses the same playlist system that they have in the past. So they will be able to, you know, tweak what sort of matchmaking games are available.
Yeah.
There are certain holes that people are like, why isn't there any Rocket Race? Why isn't there, what was another one that people, like, wanted? There's no, like, free-for-all Slayer. There's Regicide, which is like that, except it's kind of shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the lead player gets a target icon over their head that everyone knows where they are. And they have a bounty, but they don't get any bonus for being the lead player.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Juggernaut with no benefit to being the Juggernaut.
Weird.
Yeah.
Very weird.
They are, like, curating it. Like, I don't know. I don't think it was there on launch, but there is now a SWAT game mode in matchmaking.
Mm-hmm. Which I really enjoyed SWAT, because it made it feel not like Halo.
I didn't enjoy SWAT, because it made it feel less like Halo.
Oh. This is something, like, unappealing to me about, like, here's the way that you kill guys. You either get a power weapon, or you empty your clip as you run up to them, and then you punch them.
Okay.
Like, I, like that, for some reason, like, I don't know, either I have done too much of that in Halo, or that is, like, too much the same no matter what weapon you have, no matter who you're running against, and sometimes it comes down to luck of, like, who presses the button first and gets the lunge to punch for the kill. Like, maybe I'm playing badly, but it also seems like anytime I'm shooting someone who isn't charging directly at me, that means that there is somebody who is charging directly at me that I'm not looking at.
Do you primarily play Free-for-All Slayer on small maps?
No.
Okay.
Like,
that may be something that the loadout system actually alleviates a bit, because there's never the situation where, like, you run into someone else who has spawned with only the assault rifle and no grenades, and so your only course of action is to run towards each other and dump.
True. Plus, different weapons give you different... Like
you're always
like,
spawning...
Halo 1 was the worst. Like, I could not play the multiplayer in Halo 1 just because I felt like I was doing that exact motion every single time. And for one thing, I was bad at it, but for two, like, it just was not...
They didn't introduce any of, like, the precision rifles at that point. Like, they had the pistol filling that role.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
and then
Halo 2,
the problem was, like, it was still that.
But now I was doing it with two guns.
But the change was, then if somebody has a shotgun, they just take you out immediately.
Actually, I think the big deal in Halo 2 was some kind of battle rifle glitch, where you could melee someone and be shooting them at the same time.
Hmm. Interesting. Something about burst fire?
Yeah, I don't know.
Even I remember Reach, that one... I think we played it a lot when it was, like, that wave-based mode, and it was, like...
Firefight?
Yeah, no. The one where built up, complete different objectives.
Yeah, I forget what that's called.
Yeah, but, like, that one where it's... I think it's, like, a shipyard. So there's, like, that big, like, all the rails up top and then, like, two big flat-down areas and building on things on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, I really like that map.
Yeah, it's
or at least I feel like
map.
I should. But, like, even on that one, like, I felt like either I was doing something interesting and fun, like driving a vehicle or using a giant weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, it was... I was charging at somebody and we were both thumping at each other and then whoever punched first won. Or I was shooting at somebody across the map, which just gave somebody enough time to sneak up behind me and kill me.
Yeah, for me at this point, there is a sort of similar feeling of staleness in, like, a lot of the times the encounters are going to be me and some guy are, like, 50 yards away from each other going brr, 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 until one of us falls down.
Yeah.
But that is somewhat alleviated by, like, the ordnance drops. Because even if there isn't something on map, like, you can actually... If you die without using the ordnance drop, like, you don't lose it.
Ooh.
Like, you still have it on hand. And good. It's not... Your counter for it, like, builds up between lives. Like, it's not like you have to get it all in one go. So, like, even over the course of, you know, a game when you're not doing pretty well, at some point, you will probably, like, be able to drop something specifically for yourself that changes the way that you fight, at least for a little while.
Yeah. And just the idea of being able to pick your loadout, not only changes it so, like, not everybody is going to start with the assault rifle and have to take on dumping as a primary action, but also it means that, like, if you are going to be, you know, dying a lot and coming back with the same weapons over and over again, you can at least pick what weapons those are going to be. So if you don't like running up and dumping, you can pick the assault rifle or you can pick, you know, just something that is more pleasing to you to use initially.
Yeah. It's basically like you pick a primary, a secondary, an armor ability, and then these two sort of support abilities.
Mm.
So even if you are like, you know, oh, I just got this battle rifle class, whatever, like you might have like a jetpack and endless mobility and extended scanners or something.
Mm.
Like there's a lot.
There's more that you come in with.
Yeah, there's more to
your
to
default state is more interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, let's drop into some Forza Horizon.
Yeah, the other big release that Nick has been playing. I haven't gotten my hands dirty on this one, so why don't you take the wheel here?
No! Like, it's almost weird to call it a big release, because it doesn't feel like a big release.
Yeah.
It's a less harsh Forza game.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, like, it seems like the biggest thing is that, consider this. They give you points for bumping other drivers.
Yeah, that was the sort of thing that I watched Nick play like maybe 20 minutes of the game before we came down here and started recording because he was making a dope Trans Am.
Yep.
And the thing that sort of stuck out to me as most un-Forza-like was like the burnout style, like notifications of sweet drift, 500 points and whatnot.
Yeah. People are making a lot of very direct comparisons to Kudos from Project Gotham Racing, which is spot on. Like there's, it's kind of, I kind of like how their combo system works. Cause it's like the longer you do a single activity, the more points you get for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you chain activities together, it gives
that's
you like
when you get multipliers,
a 0.1 addition to your multiplier.
Okay.
So you have to do like, you have to chain together two things before you get double points.
So kind of a less, multiplier heavy version of the combo system in say a Tony Hawk.
Yes.
Where it's like, I'm going to do six different grinds really fast on this rail and explode my score.
But also they have this, like, I can't even explain all of them, but they have basically like super moves that you can pull.
What?
So there is drafting where you drive behind another car and you slipstream, and there you get points for passing.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a pass chained off of a slipstream, you get like an extra 1,000 points for a slingshot bonus.
Okay.
There is a drifting one, and there is wreckage, which is when you slam into like a signpost or a billboard or something. If you chain those together, it is known as a sideswipe. If you do like two near misses at the same time, it gives you a threading the needle bonus. And
nice.
They are worth far more than anything else is.
That's really awesome.
It is really awesome. I don't know what all of them are. There's like speed, which is like driving over 100 miles an hour for uninterrupted like 10 seconds or something.
Jeez.
There's Daredevil. I don't know what that is. There's Crash
something
Landing,
jumping,
which
maybe.
Is something about jumping. I think if you come down really hard or like land on your roof, it's a crash landing.
Is Daredevil for driving a long time while looking exclusively at the rear view?
I don't know. It might be. I'm not even sure.
Driving style.
I haven't like found like a good list of what they are, but it's nice, especially because one of the sort of activities is basically the stunt mode from Burnout, where it is all about like just basically doing like a 2-minute run of just constant full chaining to hit certain score targets.
Mm.
And that's sort of my least favorite because it is so hard to do.
Yeah.
Like that's, it's physically because they give you different cards, and like, you know, sometimes you can do it by just like snaking and just getting like a lot of little drifts for 2 minutes straight. Sometimes they'll give you an all-wheel drive car, and that doesn't work.
Yeah,
because at the same time, this game is still Forza.
Yeah, like it still has that simulation-heavy engine.
The engine placement, drivetrain type, a lot of, you know, you can upgrade different parts of your car, and it will make it behave better in different ways.
Yeah,
but they've lost all aspects of tuning.
Okay,
that I've seen.
You're not specifically setting your camber for
the
specific turn on this specific course.
You're not, you know, letting air out of your front tires to give you a little more traction. that's not in there anymore.
Oh, I thought I heard something just now.
What was that?
I think it was Jesse weeping.
It might have been Jesse weeping. So, like, they took that out, and there's no simulation damage. There's only cosmetic damage. And basically what this does is it... And when I say they give you points for bumming, they do. But to be fair, if you're doing, like a combo chain, like, even though they give you points for bumping, you know, trading paint, there is a tolerance level to how hard you can hit.
Before it will break a combo?
Yeah, most of the time, like, if you just, like, screw up a drift and slam sideways into a wall, it'll just drop all of the points you've accumulated and you don't score them.
Good.
You
don't deserve those points.
But at the same time, like, I don't know, like, there's something very Forza about... It's not so much that it's encouraging that aggressive driving, it's that it's not punishing you as harshly for it. Which is kind of strange, because now I'm playing it more like I would play, let's say, a Midnight Club.
Yeah.
Well,
it is a very different, just, like, general formula that Forza has been in the past with, like, the open world and, you know, other cars on the road and whatnot that aren't racers that are just there.
But that's the thing. Like, I think this change, basically in damage, is, like, the thing that makes the game feel most different.
Mm,
like,
true.
Like, I want to say the cars do feel a little looser, a little more arcadey. Like, a lot of times I feel I don't need to slow down as much as I would in a regular Forza game.
Mm.
But that could just be because I'm not as worried about slamming into a wall.
Yeah.
Like, very much, yeah. I think that could be it. So, like, you know, I'm slamming into walls, I'm slamming into cars, and it's not, you know, it's not a good strategy.
But it's not a cause to just restart an event.
Yeah. Although I have started playing on hard,
mm-hmm.
and if I'm in, like, a... There's, like, one car that I have for doing VW and hatchback races,
mm-hmm.
which is a very poor car. So I've...
Is it like a Golf?
Basically, yeah. But I had to restart a race, like, 6 times before I came in first.
What?
Just because, like, I had to be, like, perfect, because I kept coming in, like, second or third.
Oh, I thought you said 6 times when you came in first.
Oh, no.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, it still sort of feels like a Forza. It has a clutch button,
yep.
which that is the most important thing to me, basically.
Yeah.
It has,
like, vinyl groups.
Oh, all the painting stuff is in there. You can import, apparently, all the way from Forza 2.
Really?
If you have had every game. So I have Forza 2 and Forza 3. I need to borrow Jesse's Forza 4
to import it
into there back into Forza Horizon. Okay. But then I'll have my Xeon logo back.
Cool.
The fact that it's open world, when you get into a race, doesn't mm-hmm. mean anything.
Yeah.
But
I mean, when I showed up, you had just said that you had just bought a car and had to drive it to the paint shop.
You don't necessarily have to.
Oh, okay.
There's fast travel.
Oh, okay.
Basically, like, in the middle, there's, like, 8 shops in, like, the central hub.
Mm-hmm.
Fast travel there is free. And
okay.
then throughout the map are different outposts, which you need to drive past them to find them. But then
okay.
once you find them, you can fast travel there. Which
at some sort of credit fee?
Is at a credit fee unless you do PR stunts at each one, which will then decrease it until it's free.
Okay.
And that's where the stunt driving comes in. Also, a photo mode comes in where you need to drive a car to like a scenic location specified
what?
Without damaging it too much to be in the picture.
That's cool. Do you then take that picture yourself?
Yes, you do have to take the picture, and that's what does it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then the last one is speed traps. Like, all over the world, there are speed traps.
Mm-hmm. And you try to go fast through them.
Yeah, it says, like, all right, here's a car, here's a speed trap you need to reach, here's a time limit, go break this target speed. And then you go and you do that. And then you can fast travel around the world, basically, for free.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 3 things that keep you from fast traveling closest to the next event, which is upgrade billboards. There are 100 billboards. Each one gives you a 1% discount on upgrades. There is the barn finds, which mm-hmm. are cool because it doesn't tell you where they are. It tells you the area they are in, and then you have to go drive around the indicated area and actually, like, look for it.
Look for a barn with a car in it.
Yes. Which actually has been pretty hard.
Are there barns without cars in them? Like, are there decoy barns?
I mean, unless it's like a scenic specific building, a lot of the houses and barns look very similar, very like similarly low poly and low texture. So it is a decent hide and seek game, and especially if you're playing at night.
Yeah,
because there's a day night cycle now too. And what was the third thing? And then all the speed trap cameras.
Mm.
I know Burnout Paradise had the, I forget exactly what their name for it was, but there was the Showtimes. Where Showtime was the other thing. Basically, every street was a separate time trial.
Mm-hmm.
And you could set them on every street, and then when people were going online, they could do it too.
This was actually something I wanted to ask you about, because you said that a lot of the stuff is weirdly locked behind Gold Account. Like, you can't export your photos to anything without putting them, like, on your storefront, which requires a Gold Account.
Yeah.
And you also said there's no local multiplayer either.
Yeah.
Are there, like, leaderboards or anything that you can access without gold?
I want to say there is. I have not checked them so far because I'm pretty sure I'm the only person I know who has Forza Horizon. It does do this weird rivals thing where when you beat a race,
mm-hmm.
it suggests a person to take on as a rival.
Okay.
And pretty much every time it is somebody who is, like, also done this course and has done like a less than a second better than you.
Oh,
so
okay.
It is something that encourages you, like, no, just do a little bit better, and you can like move up on the scoreboard. It doesn't show you like where you're ranked relatively or anything like that. It just comes up and says, like, here's somebody who was just slightly hey, better than you.
Some rando did this in 0.7 seconds faster yeah. than you.
And like, it just comes up with their name. And the best one I think was the one that showed up while you were here, which was just Private Pooh Bear. And like, there's not a really good reason to do that, mm-hmm. though, because like the amount of money you get is just a piddlance of money. Like, it's like 2,000 credits. Meanwhile, I'm getting like 26,000 for defeating Jeez. For beating the race. Then again, I'm also playing like with everything turned really hard because I'm used to normal Forza,
mm-hmm.
and so
you've
means
got no traction control or guidelines or anything.
That means I'm getting like 115% credits for each race.
Okay.
Because it's again, it's the same Forza thing. Like, the more guides and assists you put on, it gives you like a
yeah, yeah.
it lowers how much you get. You may only get like 80% of the thing. Meanwhile, I have them all off.
Yeah.
No driving line, no nothing, having clutch width break, no traction. No, I have traction control. I don't have ABS. And so I'm just making money. Like I don't even have the free discounts yet, but I don't worry about it anymore. I just buy what I need.
Especially like, you are already at like 70% off everything.
Yeah. Doesn't count for cars though.
Okay.
But I there's only one car I saw that is more than I have. It's like 2 million and change, and I'm at like 1.8 million.
What was it though?
It was
it some very expensive powerful car that was also butt ugly?
Yes.
So fuck it.
No, I need to get at least one.
Like, when you were looking at that, like, one of those car packs, and what was it, like, the Gumpert or something that was yep. on there? I was just like, that looks like it's probably so fucking fast, and also entirely atrocious.
Yep.
That looks like a loathsome car, and I am sorry that I've seen it.
Well, because that Gumpert was the black one with the orange lines.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me the blue one, which came with the game, because I had saved data from past Forza games.
Is it less ugly?
It is exactly the same shape. I just painted it blue. I painted it a nice blue because I couldn't think of anything to paint on it at the time. But yeah, all that painting stuff is in there. It's pretty much exactly the same as it has been, so if you know it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called community vinyls.
Yeah.
Like, as a vinyl shape thing. Because normally, you know, it's like primitives and numbers and stuff and just like the building blocks. But now there are community ones, and I don't know if they change over time. They might. But I think it's just like, it could be like user created or suggested vinyls.
Okay.
I do not know what the deal with that is yet.
Okay.
But yeah, so it. But then once you get into a race, like, there's like three different things you can do. There's like a normal race, whether it be circuit or rally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, they close off all alternate roads. There are no shortcuts. It's just, you know, go. They've taken out Forza Glove, so if you want to cut corners and go off-road, that's totally allowed now.
Yeah, I saw that. Your Trans Am was very good at bumping over hills.
Yeah, which I showed you the pictures of me in the Lamborghini.
Yes.
So, like,
vertical.
You're allowed to go off-road.
That doesn't mean it's always a good idea.
They do not punish you with speed. They punish you with verticality.
They punish you with the fact that you are in some kind of crazy supercar that is half an inch off the ground.
And now you are in the air
and
upside down.
And now you are vertical.
Yes. But yeah, so the races feel basically like Forza races. But again, mm-hmm. like, I find myself driving more aggressively because they're not punishing me for yeah. not driving aggressively. But at some point, you do find a decent balance of like the actual difficulty and your ability to drive that makes it worth playing and not just a pushover.
Yeah. And while tuning isn't in there, like, you know, when I showed up, you were still upgrading that Trans Am and you were driving around and fishtailing like an asshole. You did like an engine swap and got racing slicks and got bigger brakes and a different suspension and like a roll cage and stuff.
Yep.
And then you were fishtailing slightly less.
No, I was fishtailing more, but at a higher speed.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, like, the open world is nice, because sometimes I do just like driving around
yeah.
in the cockpit view, and at night, like, it gets really pretty, and the sunsets, like, this game looks
yeah, like,
really good.
What little I saw of it, I really enjoyed the environment in that game of just, like, driving along bare rock cliffs with a sunset, like, the
yeah.
sun setting in the background.
Like, that's the thing. Like, I wish there were more collectibles because...
just want to spend more time enjoying the scenery.
In Project Gotham Racing, one of my favorite things to do was to turn off the HUD, set it to, like, practice laps, set it to rain, and then just drive around for a while.
Yeah.
And now they've given me an open world where I don't even have to, like, pretend that there's not a race going on. There's just, like, no, you're just here. Just drive around if you want. Mm. It's really nice. And then being able to look for the barn finds and the signs and stuff, that's nice. They do have the challenge anybody on the road, like a Tokyo Extreme Racer. I did not realize that would be in there, but that is, and that's pretty good.
Now, is it really anybody? Because, like, from what I saw, it just seemed that there were fodder cars and then, like, named dude cars.
Yes, there is an idea of... Also, the whole kudos system. Mm-hmm. Like, you notice I was at, like, 98 or whatever by this point.
Yeah.
You start off in, like, 250th, and it is the popularity rankings.
Okay.
So that is, like, a computer... populated leaderboard of like kudos points.
Okay.
Not like it changes for anybody else, but you are working your way up.
Yeah.
And that's what unlocks more showcase events. And that's about it as far as I know. And a couple of achievements. The showcase events are basically all time trials except for a couple of one-on-one races like Mustang versus Mustang.
Yep.
And the idea of those is you race them either versus like an airplane or a hot air balloon or just one other car. And then the car, they give you a car for that. And if you win, you get to keep it.
Hold on.
Yes, I'm.
You race planes in this game?
Yes. It's really weird because just like there are checkpoints along the route and it will just like buzz bomb you as you're crossing a checkpoint. And it's like, I don't think it's ever been a case where it's been like more than a second ahead or behind me.
Jeez.
So it really basically is just like a maybe dynamic time trial.
Beat this meter.
Which, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I got a cool car. I do need to, you know, be on my game. There have been times when I have lost. It's not got severe rubber banding. Mm-hmm. It may just be, like, super tight like that. And it's kind of cool because I'm racing an airplane in a Lamborghini. And then what is the third type of event? There are street races. Like, there are street races where you challenge people, mm-hmm. but there's also street races... Like there are street race hubs that you go to, and then there are people who are like, yo, we're racing for pinks, which I have not lost yet, but I have also not gained any cars from them yet. So that may be a story hook.
Jeez.
But these are the races where there is traffic. Mm-hmm. I don't think they close off alternate roads. It is just like, you know, here's where the next checkpoint is. It makes it very much like a midnight club.
Cool.
Yeah. I feel like... this is sort of a cool thing for them to do to make this like, you know, we have our simulation thing. I would like the only thing like I would like to see them do from here is say, you know, we're going to put full damage back in. And if you mess up, that's your ass.
Mm-hmm.
And to do more aesthetic things.
Yeah.
Like to play this or a midnight club. Like, I'm still playing this because it's new and because it's... I like the challenge of driving around.
Mm-hmm.
But... and because there are things to collect. Like, I almost have a feeling that once I run out of things to collect and do sort of in the open world mode, I will get
bored.
You might
be done with it?
I might get bored of just doing the new races. And the thing about Midnight Club is when you get a new car, you get to play dress up with your car.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can change headlights, you can change interior lights, you can do all of these things. I would like to see that level of detail.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get to pick, like, your rims and whether or not you have a hood scoop, but it isn't to the same volume.
Yes, but I want, like, and that's the thing, like, I've been able to pick side skirts. There was one, the Volkswagen that I have that really sucks had, like, 7 different front ends that you could pick from.
Really?
Yeah, like, some of them they have a bunch of options for,
mm-hmm.
but it's not consistent. A lot of cars, you don't get any options.
Well, they're all based on, like, existing aftermarket things, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But like, even in, like, you know, if you don't want to give them to me on supercars, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I like a lot of the consumer-level cars. Like, I have a Supra. I bought out all the Mazdas.
What was that that really derpy lime green car that we played around with in, I think it was Forza 4?
The Miura? The Lancia, the one that looks like a bathtub?
Maybe. We did, like, some kind of massive engine swap on it that made it, like, just retarded and impossible to drive. And then we took it down Fujimi Kaido?
Fujimi Kaido.
Fushigi Kaido.
I want to say that might have been the Lancia, but...
Okay.
The cars.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, I like the idea of taking some, like, not even like midline, just like shitty car.
Yep.
And just making a ridiculous, gaudy mess out of it. And then also putting an enormous engine in it.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is super great. And this game does have that. One thing I do want to say is sort of the gag of this game is that you're in Colorado for the Horizon Festival.
Yep.
Which is cars and music. And I'm a little disappointed by the setting, by this Colorado incarnation.
Yeah.
Because compared to, like, there is no Fujimi Kaido.
Yeah.
There is no, you know, Monaco Seaside. Everything is, like, a lot of brown rocks. And then there's that section where you drive by the dam, and then there's a thing in the middle. Like, it reminds me a lot of Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. Because that game was another one, sort of be like, yeah, this is in Colorado where there's huge stretches of road, and it's all about going really fast. And, like, it is, but, you know, in doing an open world, you kind of, you know, you make a map out of it. You want to do interesting things.
Yeah.
But now they're sort of, you know, rather than just having, like, well, you know, this is our short, tight map, this is our big, wide map, this is our perfect oval, now it's just like, we're going to try to put all of these into the same thing, but, you know, you can't make a map that's really big enough to get, you know, different and locales out
different
of
environments.
Yeah.
Or,
because, like, there is, like, a Fujimi Kaido mountain curves kind of section.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually over near the dam. But,
but,
you know,
it's still orange rocks just like everywhere else.
It's still orange rocks and maybe a river. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, it's got the thing where, like, there's not a lot of pop to it.
Mm.
There's, like, one section of highway which does not encircle the entire map, and that makes me sad.
Oh.
What if there are a couple little, like, town city sections, but, like, not enough to make a complex racetrack out of.
Yeah.
Like, you do, like, a short little, like, 4-lap circuit thing in one of those, and I think it's only, like, 3.
So if they just went completely bonkers and didn't try for any attempt at, like, geographical accuracy of any kind, and just did, like, here is the jungle, here is the mountain, here is the desert, here is the beach all right next to each other. Would that be awesome?
Yes.
Because I think that would be awesome.
Brutal Legend.
Yeah?
The one achievement in Brutal Legend where you ride that pig across the map and dump him in the Sea of Tears, like, doing that, you see that, like, yeah, there's a lot of sort of jarring, like, transitions between, like, all right, here's a field, here's a jungle, here's the mountains, here's the death. But you know what? It works, because each one of those pops a lot, and to have the fluid, like, I'm walking, I'm still walking, now I'm somewhere different and still walking.
I'm in this new place with its own personality.
Yeah. Like, even if it's jarring, I think it works.
How much inspiration do you think should be taken from the world of Mata Nui, home of the Bionicles? Which, if I remember the packaging from, like, the first series Bionicles that I had, was just a big fucking disc that was divided into, like, 8 sections radially. And it was like, this one's, like, an Arctic wasteland. This one's a jungle. This one's a poisonous swamp.
Step back, like, 3 generations of those to the disc throwers.
Oh my god! Throwbots!
The Throwbots, who were all motorcycles.
Yeah.
I would take a game placed in the Throwbots universe. Holy shit, Throwbots.
I'm thinking of something else. There was the motorcycle ones that had, like, the thing that flipped up and then it spat the wheel out.
Yeah.
But then there were other ones that had, like, a springy arm that held a disc and they just threw the disc.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, they were different, weren't they?
Yeah. Because I remember I had,
oh,
like,
my God,
one of those that was, like, this quadruped dude with, like, a big springy arm sticking up out of his back.
Yeah.
And then, like, a pair of pickaxes on the side that you could swing up and down with a little gear.
I remember I had, I think one of those guys was a motorcycle.
Yeah?
Because I do remember one of my favorite Lego sets ever. And
oh, there
sort of
was.
Toys.
It was like Turbo or something. It was a green one that had, like, a racing helmet.
Because I think I had him, and I had the one who had the propellers on his back.
Yep.
Oh, I know what the picture for this episode is going to be now. But yeah, like, Forza Horizon. it's a fun time. Like, but it feels like it feels lighter than a normal Forza experience. Like, it has the, It's just really weird because you go to Forza and you expect, like, all right, there's going to be like 300 different events with different restrictions and stuff. There's going to be like 2,000 cars or whatever. And you're just going to, and there's going to be all these little twiddly tweaking bits that you do.
I'm going to play this one race on Le Mans. It's going to be the reverse circuit. Only these cars are going to be allowed.
And it's just going to be like 500 laps. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. And this game doesn't have that. Like, it feels like a much lighter experience. Like I haven't seen a race with more than four laps, which I like. Let's not get it wrong. Yeah. That makes this a game I am more likely to play and enjoy my time.
I remember one time Jesse was like, hey, dudes, let's do three laps on the Nürburgring. And we were like, Jesse, the Nürburgring is like 18 miles long.
He's like, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it'll be great.
Because he comes from a Gran Turismo background where they had like 100 lap, 24 hour real time race simulations.
Yeah.
I would almost be down for that if we did it like as a team.
Yeah.
And even like make two teams and make a contest.
That's what Desert Bus is.
Basically, yeah. Dude, Desert Bus.
Yeah.
But like this game doesn't, like this game feels more like an arcade racer.
Mm.
But, and I think it's mainly the whole damage thing where like you're allowed to go sort of aggressively. So you get into that arcade racer mindset and it's like, except for a clutch button, it stops sort of feeling like Forza.
Mm.
And just starts feeling like, yeah, okay, I'm driving around and I'm having a race. And that almost makes it seem very bland. It looks really good. There is no like geo equivalent Civic in this game.
Oh.
So already it's losing points. But, like, I'm probably going to play this one until there's nothing left in it. Like, I'm already doing a thing where, like, I'm looking around at different releases and being like, oh, you know, you need this kind of car for this one. I was like, well, that means I'd have to buy it and upgrade it, and that just sounds like more time than I really want to do. So I'm just going to go look for a couple more signs and then be done with it.
Yeah. Go track down that last barn.
Yeah. But then at the same time, sometimes I come in and I'm like, all right, I want to take this car and I want to put this interest, I want to paint it like this, and then I'll take that around, I'll do maybe like 10-20 races, and next thing I know it's like, oh, it's been a couple of hours I've been doing this.
Yeah, so it still seems like there's enough of a depth there that it can be kind of a sandbox.
It's not even that there's a, like, that's the thing, not really, it doesn't, there's not quite enough depth for that. Like, because without the tuning, like, what you do to individual cars is just like, well, I make it better. And do I make it better first in engine or in handling or stopping? Like,
I always kind of felt like that was the case with Forzas, though.
Yeah.
Like it was never like a trade-off. It was always just like, this is the more powerful engine. These are the better brakes.
Yeah. And, like, a lot of this is making these decisions about, like, okay, your car is too, like, you put everything on this car. It is now too powerful for this race.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of don't want to fiddle around with making a car worse. Like, that doesn't feel good to do to me. Like, there's something to be said for saying, like, okay, here's the car, and, you know, we're all doing a little, like, taking a car, putting it in a lower class, and then tuning it so it still behaves really well.
Mm.
Like, there's something good to that. I'm bad at it, but, like, I've watched Jesse do it, and that's really interesting. Like, I've watched some of my friends do it, like, even up at school. And the big thing was, like, all right, we're going to do C-class. But then, you know, who just does the best tuning
job? Who can push C-class to its limit?
Yeah, like with that, without all the tuning stuff, the Torino stays a bad car.
Yeah.
But you can make a really dope-ass Torino with the ability to tune it and make little adjustments. Hmm. But with that gone, like, the whole class thing, like, becomes a lot less interesting to me.
Dag.
And it's just like, well, why can't I just, you know... Which, it does have the auto upgrade. I just refuse to use it because... Yeah. I have not met a computer that thinks the same way I do and makes the same decision, so I'm never happy with the result when I do those things.
Mm-hmm.
It tries to upgrade my handling before maxing out the engine. Can you believe that shit?
I could.
Listen, I want when I go off-road, because I wasn't able to turn, that I will be going fast enough to achieve orbit. These are my demands.
You know what? That's a solid goal. I'm not going to fault you for that.
Yeah. And, like, I'm almost harping on it, but it's, like, I'm just, like, a little disappointed in it, is a thing. Because, like, from what Forza is, Forza I expect to be a bit deeper.
Mm.
And, like, there's something to be said for, like, you know, putting the auto upgrade and doing that stuff and letting you do, you know, cosmetic damage only. But I wanted more. I wanted the higher risk of, like, full damage with traffic. Because having traffic in there, first of all, your driving line is pointless now because it doesn't account for the traffic. And you need to, like... be more into it and like have like a bit better of an adaptability, and I really like that. But you know, It's just like, or I could just drive like a butt and there's no penalty for that. And that sort of takes away from that Forza experience. At which point, like, yeah, okay, it's still like a pretty, you know, still like a pretty interesting like open world driving game, and it feels really good. It is fun to play. It has good painting and stuff.
But you would rather have it be more specifically Forza than like, you know, like you've been comparing it to like Project Gotham and Burnout and stuff.
Yeah, because if you're not going to, you need to compare it to Forza because it is a Forza game.
Yeah.
But it is like the least Forza game. And when you start taking the Forza out of it, the comparisons is like Burnout Paradise and Midnight Club. And like it is, I'm trying to think like what Midnight Club offers. Like Midnight Club has some extra powers in the car and like some stunts and stuff. And there's a lot of shortcuts.
Like power-ups?
Not power-ups, but like a zone. So you get a moment of like slow motion. You have the roar, and which will make cars like sort of clear the path for you. extra damage so you can knock people out. Like, you know, Midnight Club, you can get knocked out of a race by taking too much damage.
Yeah.
Like, that is a more Forza thing that this Forza game does not have.
Mm.
Yeah, like, it feels like it's just like they've made it too light. It is now lighter than it has made it lighter on the Forza, and that was really the only hook that it was going to have going into this world of like open-ended racing games.
Yeah.
And that's a little disappointing. Because like if they were just going to add to Forza, all right, good. But they've taken a bit of Forza out. So we got more stuff that we could talk about, but this is where we should probably break this episode in half.
Yeah.
So let's do some wrap-up here, and we'll take a break. And then next week, you will get the other half of this episode.
As always, if you'd like to leave us feedback, you can contact us at podcast@alikustudios.net. You can also find us on the iTunes Music Store and in the Zune Marketplace. If you'd like to leave us a review and a rating, we would be very appreciative.
You can always contact us by finding us at facebook.com/Alikku, finding us on Twitter at Alikku, and even finding us on Tumblr at alikku.tumblr.com. At all of these places, there are ways to send us feedback, and you can keep up to date on things that are going on the site and happenings going on around town and what's up, you know.
Our site is alikustudios.net, where you can find the rest of our podcast, comics, and whatnot.
That's about it.
And that, yeah, I believe that's it.
Desert Bus is currently going on.
Oh, yeah.
Desert Bus for Hope 6, desertbus.org. They are being, like, crazy cool people and doing, like, a ton of really great giveaways and auctions and stuff, in addition to, like, a constant live stream, which, like, they are playing that game constantly.
Yeah.
They have people doing 12-hour shifts this year from 9 to 9.
Oh, jeez.
So the first shift just ended. They are on West Coast time, so, like, noon our time is when they do the switch-off abouts.
So, you know, if you have a minute or a day, go check out their stream. They're doing a lot of good things for charity.
Yeah, like they're basically prostituting themselves and their pride to make money for the children. Like they have this system of challenges going on where basically people can submit a challenge for like a specific person or like anybody or a group. And then they can just be like, all right, we'll do that. And it'll be like, you know, $10 to sing Skyrim.
Is that why they were singing like Irish Whatever. Folk songs?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's cool. 'Cause like it's cool. It's also a little scary. There is a fan base for Desert Bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it is, like, there are in-jokes, there are things from previous years, there are, like, you know, people know, like, it's like, oh, when Paul comes on and does his shift, we're going to make him sing the Irish songs and stuff. The very first thing they did was have him put hats on his head, because, like, 4 years ago, in one of the videos, there was a gag about things on Paul's head, and it was sort of like a meta video joke of, like, what do we do here? And it was just Paul just staring at the camera for 10 minutes with, like, a cute plush balance on his head. And now that is a thing. Every year, they're like, here, $20 to do, like, 20 hats on his head. And
Paul,
they did it.
Put your shoes on your head.
And they got $20. Somebody was driving the bus with their toes. They all spoke using misappropriated air quotes for, like, 15 minutes straight.
Okay, but the good people can see these things for themselves by logging into their stream and then emptying their wallets.
Yep. And it's for the children.
For charity.
For everything goes to everything.
I didn't mean to make that sound snarky or anything. Like, seriously, it's for a good cause.
Yeah, no, like, it's fantastic and it is entertaining. And if you get lonely, there are always people there.
If you're enjoying Neat Life and would like a little companionship for a while, try Desert Bus.
And it's going to go for like at least a week, it usually does. So through Thanksgiving, basically, this will be happening.
So if you're having the family over and you're all enjoying a big meal together, maybe take a minute to realize not everybody out there is having that big meal with their family like you are. So help buy some Game Boys for kids in hospitals. Shit, I'm making it sound dumb again.
No. I mean, that's legit. You know, somebody brought them a chocolate fountain.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
So, we're going to go take a break, and for you, it'll be a longer break.
Yeah, we've got to clear our heads a little bit.
And we will talk to you. You will hear from us. There will be some sort of one-way interaction between you and us.
It could be two-way if you want. We got Twitter.
We do have Twitter.
We got emails.
It would be nice if it was two-way. But
I have like 6 access codes for Dota 2 that I am not using. If you want one, just fucking tell me and I'll give one to you.
Where'd you get those?
Steam gave them to me.
Weird. Until next week, this is Nick for the Elite Studios podcast saying give credit, or credit is 25 cents per play.